Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Boomer and the Babe Show, giving voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now, here are the hosts of the Boomer and the Babe Show, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And I am Pete Peters.
And I'm Deborah Brown.
And she's with us again today. She missed a day. She's been off one day this week.
Working on the book.
And speaking of working on the book,
yeah,
we've got a gentleman with us today that...
He's
been working on the book for a while. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of books. And we're glad to have him here for two reasons. First of all, he's going to be a great guest. And number two... he filled in for somebody that was not going to make it at the last minute. I got hold of him last night and emailed him, and he came along, and we certainly do appreciate that. And his name is Jerry Simmons. He is a book publisher, a speaker, a consultant, and an expert in what it takes to get your book published. And we're going to get as much information from him and squeeze everything we can out of him in the fastest half hour in radio. So we always start with Jerry talking with Deborah. So go right ahead, Deborah, and...
I will put it to you this way. We'd like to know who you are, and the way we ask that is give us your two-minute movie. That is your life in 2 minutes. Ready, set, go.
Great. Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me. It's great to be here. A two-minute story of Jerry Simmons. Well, I was born in Oklahoma, educated in Oklahoma to a blue-collar family, started selling books right out of college, answered an ad in a paper and started selling books in a big brown station wagon, driving from state to state, bookstore to bookstore, and over my career, I went from Random House to Warner Communications, the old Warner Communications in 1979, and then headed off to New York and spent many years in New York and Connecticut in management and sales. And I worked for Warner Communications from 79 till 2003. And I've been very fortunate and had the pleasure of working with a number of New York Times bestselling authors and New York Times bestselling books. And I just love publishing and writers and the whole business. So I like talking about it.
So... is it safe to say that you have unretired? I think you've probably retired. And then, it's like many baby boomers, of course you are one, welcome to the baby boomer set. That's our thing, right? We reinvent. And we go, I don't want to be retired, right?
Right.
That's what happened to you, too.
That's what happened. When I left New York, I said, I don't want to be involved with publishing books ever again. I want to do something completely new. Took a couple of years off, wrote my own book. And I really did that not for a book, but just sort of self-therapy after 25 years.
Like a cleanse.
That's right, purging myself of all that New York stuff. And then I got a call one day from someone that said, would you come speak to our group? And I said, well, I don't know really if I have anything to talk about. Interesting. And they said, oh, sure, come talk about your experience in New York. So I went, and that led to where I am today. And so I speak around the country at a variety of conferences, and I work with authors and small publishers, and it's just a lot of fun.
So you were telling me before the show that a lot of people don't think that the publishing aspect is the thing that the aspiring writer really wants to know. They want to know how to write. But when you get through with your speaking or somebody else is talking to them about their experience and how it's going to be to write and all the discipline and whatever the conversation is, their hands go up and they say, well, what about the publishing? What's next? Is that right? I mean,
absolutely.
It's like that's got to be in the back of the mind.
Absolutely. What I tell audiences is there's two parts to being a writer. There's writing, the editing, and getting it ready to publish, and then everything else that goes after that. And everything else is just as important as it is the writing, because today the way the business is, it's not just about great writing. It's about a good story. So you have to be able to write a good story, and you have to be able to learn how to promote yourself and how to publish correctly. And believe me, you can make mistakes in publishing, and if you do, it will cost you dearly.
Now, what is the duties of the author? Once the book is out and they've got a publisher, what does the publisher expect from the author?
If you're under contract in New York, they expect you to get out and promote your book. They expect you to do everything they ask you to do. In some cases, they will pay for it. In some cases, they won't. And they may even ask you to spend some of your own money to help market your book. But today, the way to sell books is through publicity. And so publishers are doing everything they can to generate publicity. But in turn, they do expect authors to be very proactive and generate publicity on their own. So publishers expect a lot. And from an author standpoint, you're in the business of producing content. So if you get so wrapped up in the title of your book or the story of your book or changes that are made or whatever, you're going to fail. Because I'll tell you, publishers today want content that sells. And you produce a product for them. As long as you produce that product and it sells copies, everything's fine. the first time you refuse to do something they want you to do, or your product doesn't sell as well as it should, that could very well be the end of your career.
Do they put you on the hook for the cost of that book and the cost of public? For instance, if they do a preprint of, what's a good number, 25,000?
Okay.
I don't know if that's even a logical number. But let's say 25,000, it just doesn't move. It doesn't move anywhere. Nothing's happening. Are they going to all of a sudden come back to you and give you a bill for 20,000?
No, they won't. What they'll do is, like, it's primarily where the publisher, where the author is going to have to pay is in the publicity end and the marketing end. The publisher will commit so much money to your book, but that may not be enough. So they may come to the author and say, we really like you to participate in this. And they may do it in a variety of ways. They may reduce your advance on the next book, or say they may cut your royalty for a certain amount of time. But in other words, they're looking for the author to kick in and be part of it. So they're wanting the author's help, and the author really is not in a position to refuse.
They want the author, as somebody said to us, wants to have some skin in the game.
Absolutely.
Well, they're a stakeholder in the process.
Right.
And if they're not, then the publisher is going to go on to the next person who's ready to write the next great American novel.
You know, I had a sad story. I had a lady call me from California last week, and she had been a published author for 20 years. She was under contract to HarperCollins for 11 years, had a book a year. She's been under contract to Penguin Putnam for the last 9 years, and she got a call last month, and her ninth book with Penguin Putnam was released this month in April, and they told her just last month that they would not renew her contract. So after 20 years, not only is she out of work, but her agent can't get her another contract. And the sad thing is, here's an author in the business for 20 years. She has no understanding why. She has no clue about what's going on behind the scenes, has no understanding of the business, couldn't begin to tell her what.
So she probably has not worked on her social media part.
No.
She probably has no way to capture who's been her devoted fans.
No.
So she can't go back to them and say, okay, we've got to regroup, and
right.
Now we're going to do an e-book.
Right.
Or, you know, something like that. Now we're going to repurpose my materials, and there's no way.
Well, you touched briefly on what the publisher expects of the author. What can the author legitimately expect from the publisher?
Again, if you're under contract, you can expect the publisher to absorb all of your production costs, all of your sales costs, and all of your distribution costs. They will contribute most to your marketing budget, but they will expect you to kick in. So what you really expect from the publisher is to give you support, marketing support, distribution support, because on your own, the real problem for authors is that they can't get the distribution. In other words, they have no access to the market, and that's the big key. And so for a New York publisher, that's the golden parachute, is get them into the stores, where on your own you can't do it. So that's really what the publisher brings to the table.
Now, going back to that social media part, I'm sitting here thinking, we are actually one degree away from Oprah Winfrey. In other words, we know people that know Oprah Winfrey, so maybe that's 2 degrees. So, you know, and other people of that ilk, you know, that could actually, you know, wave a magic wand and now you're like number one on the New York Times bestseller list. But if you don't understand how that works and how you leverage that and how you protect that relationship, you can mess yourself up and just go nowhere, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll give you a real quick Oprah story. When I was in New York, we were fortunate to have 5 Oprah titles. And Oprah can take a book literally from a 10,000 copy print order to a 750,000 print order overnight. But Oprah, one of her, I believe it was her second or third title, she picked a small press book from a very small company that had difficulty producing, let's say, 750,000 copies. Oprah learned after that show that she could never pick a small press title again because that publisher didn't have the ability to get the book out into the marketplace.
Oh,
that's right.
Goodness.
So her all of a sudden her office is getting calls from fans going, hey, I love the show, but I can't find the book. She learned right then that you have to stick with the big 6 publishers in New York.
Okay, so you see there, now we understand that. Debbie Allen was on our show the other day, and she wrote a book called The Confessions of Shameless Self-Promoters. She was on the Howard Stern show, and before she got home, like in 45 minutes, her sales were through the roof, and she ended up on the, you know, she's the number one best-selling author because of one 15 minutes or 7 minutes or whatever on the Howard Stern show. So that's what you're talking about. You have to have stage presence. You have to be able to fight through fear and go ahead and do the thing that you think, oh, my God, I just can't do that.
Absolutely. You have to be able to speak to people. You have to articulate your story. You have to promote yourself. It's absolutely necessary in publishing today as an author.
So you can't just put a book out there and say, there's my book. Read it, please.
you can, but the chances of being successful in doing that is probably the same as if you bought a Powerball.
Oh, geez.
As I say, it's slim and none, and slim's on a horse leaving Dodge.
Well, let me give you a sense. In 2009, according to industry statistics, there were over 350,000 new titles published. That's over
350,000
new titles published last year. That's over 900 a day.
Wow.
So again, you got to understand what the marketplace is like and where you fit into that marketplace.
Well, it's like a kid that says, "I'm going to be a professional football player," because he happens to be a star in a local high school. The chances of him getting all the way through, going to a major's college, being discovered and getting picked up by a pro team, is that slim and none thing again?
Absolutely.
I mean, really, the odds are really against it.
Well, in publishing, too, especially in the New York level, timing plays a huge part. I mean, you can have a book released, and a week later or a few days later, another best-selling author in the same genre could be released, and he can kill that book. So timing plays a huge role. So, you know, who can predict? When I was in New York, the Time Warner, the largest amount of money we ever advanced for a book was over $7 million for Jack Welch's bio, okay? We planned for 2 years to put this book out. We had him on all talk shows. We had publicity. We had advertising, promotion, everything set to go. We had books in stores, and the release date on that book was Tuesday, September 11th, 2001.
I was just getting ready to ask you.
Wow.
Exactly. I was just going to say, if the bottom falls out or somebody does something awful to this country,
absolutely,
your whole plan is a shambles.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And it's amazing to think that it is that precarious, isn't it? It is just absolutely that precarious.
It is. Now, you know, there are certain brands. I mean, obviously, in publishing, the author is the brand. So a best-selling brand, a Sandra Brown, James Patterson, a John Grisham, those brands will sell. But if you're not at that level,
yeah,
it's tough.
You're swimming upstream.
It's tough.
Absolutely. Before we go any further, though, Jerry, I'd like you to give us some contact information so we make sure we have that on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Websites, phone number, okay, whatever you'd like to
My hear. Website is writersreaders.com. You can email me at jerry@writersreaders.com. My phone number, office phone number, 623-556-2751. I answer emails personally, and I answer my phone myself. So
that's great. That really makes it nice.
There aren't
a lot
cool
of people
about,
that do
exactly.
that anymore, are there?
What's cool about that is, you know, you refer to a lot of what you're talking about is in New York, you know, when I was in New York. And I think people kind of elevate you to that, well, not only because you've done what you've done and helped who you've helped, but it's that mystique that, you know, it's that's where the shrine is, you know, where all the publishing happens. Is that pretty much true?
No, it's not. Well,
I made that up?
Certainly that's where everything is happening. But what I don't want to give the impression of is I don't want to give the impression that if you're a writer and you are not published by a New York company, that means you can't become a published author and be successful. That's absolutely not true.
Can you self-publish and then get picked up by one of the
absolutely
big houses?
Absolutely can. You know, there's a myth, and I hear it all the time, is that, well, gee, if you self-publish, no one will pick you up. It's absolutely not true. Because bottom line is, from a New York standpoint, all they care about is content that will sell. If they think they can distribute your content widely enough and make money selling copies of your book, they don't care who published it or how you published it.
So content. Content is king. Right? I mean, it really is the truth. And it is a content age. I mean, it's the information age. It's all that ways to repurpose your great content. You know, we have great content. We have people like you that we talk to, and then we can make that into other iterations. We have film that we take of our show. And it's just kind of fun to figure out how do people want to consume the content. You know, some people can listen to us at 11 o'clock. Some people have to watch it later. Some people would like to download it into their MP3 player. And now you've got the ebook situation, which I was always thinking that ebooks had to do with more like the 12-page or the 30-page little something, but you can actually put your whole manuscript up as an ebook and sell it that way, right?
Yeah. Ebooks have been around for a long time. I mean, Sony launched their reader in 99 or 2000, and so ebooks have been around for 10 years, but Amazon really sort of put it on the map with the Kindle. And now that Apple's entered the market, I can tell you that the e-book or digital marketplace is just going to change dramatically.
And I think the baby boomers are not adverse to that at all, right? I mean,
No. In fact, the statistics from Amazon indicate that the adopters for the reading device, the Kindle, is over 40. And industry shows that the majority of people downloading e-books into their devices are over 40 years of age. So it's the baby boomer generation that's really adopted the electronic book.
And you would not have thought that. Now, what I'm concerned about is that it might mean that the generations behind us are not reading as much, that maybe they're just consuming their information another way.
Well, that's true. You know, I'll tell you, J.K. Rowling introduced a lot of young people to reading, which was a great thing. And I think a lot of those young people, hopefully, are still buying books. I mean, there was an article recently in Seattle paper that indicated that young people are buying more books today than they were 10 years ago, which is a positive sign. But I agree, we need more content that young people are interested in. And hopefully, e-books through reading devices will be something young people will adapt to.
Well, for example, we have a granddaughter. We have two granddaughters, but the four-year-old is a voracious reader. I mean, she just cannot read it fast enough, and she reads. I mean, she's been reading for 2 years, and we know this because she can take an email off of the computer and read it. So it's not memorized. It's like, how did you do that, little girl? But so I don't worry about her, but I do worry about other families that are not blessed with a child that just loves reading, and if they're not helping them get that love of reading, they're not going to be successful. They're really not.
No, it's tough. It's tough. You know, and again, the juvenile market is a very small market in terms of books published. There's not that many children's books sold, and it's a sad situation. But again, hopefully, perhaps electronic books will be the way of the future. Because I mean, I have two granddaughters, and they're both into the computer. So hopefully, as they see content and read more on the computer, that they'll eventually read more books.
Yeah, that would certainly be good. And the other thing is, we just were at this local Phoenix event. What was the name of it, Deborah?
Reach Out and Read.
Reach Out and Read, and they're promoting that pediatricians, when you come in for your normal well visits and so on and so forth, instead of giving a lollipop, give them a book.
5 years in a row, they're doing that.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal idea.
And that is something that they're looking for sponsors for, and we actually bought a whole stack of books to help support the program. But I just think that's fantastic. And I know that the computer age and you know, putting it up on a digital format, that's a great idea. Why not?
Absolutely.
And if you could walk around with it, I don't see people sitting in bathtubs like you do with a book so much.
No.
If you drop it in the bathtub, I think it's done, aren't you?
No,
but it's done.
I truly believe that the future in publishing, and again, I've been at more than almost 33 years, I really believe the future of publishing is going to be the digital, because, believe it or not, the print publishing business has been in decline since the early 90s. Publishers sell fewer individual copies total each year than they did the previous year. And so that declined now 15 years, and publishers can't figure out what to do. And suddenly now people are interested in reading and books because of these reading devices. So I'm confident that this is going to be a big boom to publishing.
All right, content. Is there a place to find out who's interested in? In other words, do you Google your content idea and see how many references to, like, retirement, let's say? Let's say you wanted to write a book about retirement.
You can. You know, what I tell people is visit bookstores. Now, again, we're talking about printed books here, but if you visit bookstores, that's pretty much a laboratory for publishing. Those books were purchased for a reason, and they're purchased for a reason, and they're placed on shelves because somebody's buying those books. They're buying that author or that content or that genre, okay? Same thing with ebooks. If you go to Amazon or you go to Barnes & Noble and you browse their ebooks, you'll start to see what kind of categories are available, and that's indicative of what people are buying. Because if you see a large section of self-help books, then people are buying a lot of self-help ebooks, because that's the way the retail business works. They're going to indicate a certain amount of space for a topic or a category that's selling. And so I would advise you to go and just browse.
I have a question then about the categories that you see on the shelves. Probably there's a lead-up time that is longer for the ones that are published like that than there would be for e-books.
Absolutely.
Is that reasonable?
There's a seven-month lead time. If I sold a book on April the 1st to, let's say, if I presented it to Barnes & Noble, that book is typically not going to be on the shelves until November. And so with an e-book, I could present a book today, and it could be available in 30 days. It's that fast. So the turnaround is much, much faster for e-books than it is traditional print.
So if you know you're going to have your book put out as an e-book, you really should do your exploration in the categories that are selling right now, because it's more of a real-time snapshot.
You should. But again, I don't want to leave the impression that you should write to what's popular. I think you have to write the content that you are destined to write.
You write the content you're destined to write, and you know that you can promote it yourself, because, again, this is the way it's got to be. Even an e-book?
That's correct. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so if you've got content that you're a legend in your own mind, and you're the only person that cares. How about you just write it for your family?
Well, I mean, certainly there's a market for that. I mean, out of 350,000 titles, the large companies that mass produce books, what they're called the print-on-demand companies, okay, their CEOs have indicated that over 95% of the books they publish sell no more than 50 copies total.
Say that again?
The lifetime of
95%?
95% of the books these large mass market print-on-demand companies produce sell no more than 50 copies.
So those 900 titles a day?
Right.
Most 95%
of those,
those
never sell more than 50 copies in its lifetime.
Good night, nurse.
That's a statistic. That's true.
Right. I know.
That tells you people are producing and they're doing it for friends and family and they're hoping to sell more, but obviously people get discouraged for whatever reason or they decide that this was not meant to be or who knows.
And they might have a box of books in their garage and a couple of garages.
Absolutely.
And publish on demand means you could go to the publishing house locally, because I know there's one or two here locally, that you could go and you say, okay, I want to buy 50 copies of my book. There's a fee for that, and you walk, they print them, and you walk out 50
That's right.
copies of your
That's
book.
That's absolutely what it is.
And now you have that 50 copies, and you, in the event of ourselves, we're in business, we do marketing, if we were to write a book on marketing for whatever reason, then we could use those as back-of-the-room material or whatever. And if that's the only thing we're using them for is to help promote our brand and our capabilities and the capacities to do various things in the marketing field, that may not be a bad way to go.
Correct.
But in the event Correct. That we're looking to have that thing be one of the big marketing guru books that's going to be of all time, a Dan Kennedy book or whatever the case might be, a little more dicey.
No, I would agree. And the thing to keep in mind, if you're in the audience and you're listening to this, perception is a big part of publishing success. And what I mean by perception is, you know, you think of that seven-month lead time in print books. Well, bestsellers are made 7 months before they ever go on sale because they're bought at the point that the book's presented in bestseller numbers. So they're never on sale before they actually become bestsellers. So there's a perception built in from the publishing company that what they're presenting is going to be a best-selling title. Now, if you publish by a particular print-on-demand company, one of these big companies that mass-produce books, and they have their imprint on the side of your book or the back of your book, you immediately have the perception of inferior quality because those companies have no editorial control. It's very important to keep in mind that who you publish with or how you publish, what they put on your book creates a perception that can be negative.
You've been listening to the Boom and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversations to the world. Stay tuned for another show from our terrestrial radio archives with another interesting guest and conversation that follows immediately. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.